Priya Bandhu Ani Bhagininho, Namo Buddhaya, Jai Bhim! So I think some of you thought last night that I'd forgotten one of the Sangraha Vastus. In fact, Yashosaga said, you forgot one Sangraha Vastu. Yes, I did say at the beginning I was going to do two, and I only did one. I thought I'd said enough and I should stop. That's why I didn't go more. So tonight we have to do three Sangraha Vastus. But I have to make sure I don't get so inspired that I talk for 3 hours. But anyway, just to remind you all of what we're doing. We're looking at, well, you could say the technology of Sangha. A Sangha is spiritual community. It's friendship on the basis of going for refuge to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. But Sangha requires work. Sangha doesn't just happen. Or rather, it only happens when there are stream entrants. The rest of us, we have to work to create Sangha, to preserve Sangha, to spread Sangha. And that work has to be done again and again and again. We must never say it's up to them. The creation of Sangha, the preservation of Sangha, the spreading of Sangha is in our hands. Now you might say, well, oh dear, that's work. That is work. More work. Life consists of work, you might say. Not more work. But the fact is that it also means that we have freedom. It means we can create Sangha. It's in our power. This is one of the most important messages of the Buddha Dhamma. You know the great cry of India. Was it my Kai Kuru Shakta Hong? Mi Kai Kuru Shakta Hong. Everyone said, Mi Kai Kuru Shakta Hong. You're late. You are late. Mai Kai Kuru Shakta Hong. Whatever you say, Mi Kai Kuru Shakta Hong. This is the way people think. Mi Kai Kuru Shakta Hong has kept India in slavery. It's created slavery in India for thousands of years. What can I do? I needn't say any more words. You know, people say it's in God's hands. Mi kai kuru shakta hon. But the Buddha Dhamma says you can do something. Tumi kai kuru shakta. তুমি কাই কাহিনা কারি গুরু শাক্তা You can do something. It says it's in our hands. And this is wonderful. This is what Babasaheb brought to India. The whole of India had this mantra. Om mi kai kuru shakto hum.
Om mi kai kuru shakto hum.
The whole of India chanting this mantra. Babasaheb stood up and he said, you can do something. You can do something. And India began to stand up. This is the first and in a way you could say the most important message of the Buddha Dhamma. Babasaheb was an alarm clock for India. Wake up! You can do something. And what you can do, in this case, is create Sangha. So we're learning how you create Sangha. The Buddha is giving us a toolkit. So that we know how to create Sangha. We saw that Sangha is created by Maitri on the basis of going for refuge to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. And we saw that Maitri is a karma. It's a karma of the mind. And it can change the world. And Maitri, when it's felt between people who go for refuge to the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha, is Sangha. And then we saw that there are various things we can do to preserve Sangha. Because you know, it's quite easy to first of all experience Sangha. But then we fall back. We fall back into old habits. Because within us there are two forces at work. There's a force taking us towards the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. And then there's a force that's just the force of habit. You know, so many millions of people left the old system. They burned all the gods. They left behind their old caste identity. But gradually the gods came back. Gradually the old mentality came back. So we need to keep on recreating, re-establishing, preserving the spirit of Sangha. And I gave you the list of seven things that the Buddha said we need to do to preserve Sangha. And just to remind you of two or three of those things, first of all, he said we must meet and meet harmoniously. We must come together as we are now to listen to the Dhamma, to worship the Buddha. And if we do that often, Sangha will remain alive. We should look after, respect our elders. We should respect those who've been practicing the Dhamma for a long time. just because they're leaders or anything like that. Often the people who are most spiritually committed are the quietest. So we just respect those who've been practicing the Dhamma for many, many years. Awaz theek hai? Theek aahe? Awaz do?
Theek aahe?
So yes, we must honor and respect our elders. And then we should practice, we should go on retreat. And we should practice meditation regularly. We should have a welcoming attitude to new people. And we should have a loving attitude towards each other. So the Buddha says if we do these seven things, I've not mentioned them all here, then the Sangha will stay alive. But we don't want just to keep the Sangha alive. We want it to grow. Our aim is to make the whole of India into a Sangha. At least to make the Sangha a big influence on the whole of India. So the Buddha's given us some tools for doing that. And these are the four Sangraha Vastus. In Pali, Sangraha Vastu. The things, the elements that bring people together. And we saw last night that so the first of those Sangraha Vastus is Dana. So now I have to talk about the other three. So the second of the Sangraha Vastus is Priyavadita. That means loving speech, kindly speech. Well, obviously, loving speech is an expression of Maitri. And obviously, it's extremely attractive. Well, let's look at it the other way. You know, you hear sometimes people speaking. And as you hear their words, you feel repelled. I was in Delhi not long ago, and I went past a political rally. I won't tell you which party it was, but you'll probably be able to guess. Anyway, as I was just going past, I stopped and I listened. And I could hear the speaker was shouting, very harsh voice, ah, ah, ah. Scraped by the sound. Huh? Scraped. Huh. It was just hatred being spoken. And the speaker was full of hatred. The strange thing, people were sort of drawn to it in a way. Yeah? But you could feel the atmosphere, heavy, dark, oppressive. Oppressive. I felt I just wanted to go away. Particularly because I was a foreigner. Because you know, foreigners are responsible for all India's troubles. You Indians, you're not capable of making any trouble for yourselves. It's us foreigners who've created it for you. I have a much higher opinion of Indians. I think you're capable of making your own trouble. Anyway, what I was getting at was the harshness of the voice, the sound of hatred was repellent. All you'll draw is people's hatred. And you know what it's like when somebody uses bad language, swearing. It's ugly, it's hard on the ears. Or when somebody just goes on and on complaining. Blaming. You listen a bit more. All your energy goes. You just feel so tired, so dull, so dark. The effect of harsh speech, of ugly speech, is direct upon you. So you notice this effect. And of course, when people speak harshly, when they speak critically and so forth, well, you start to think like that too. I've noticed a common habit here in India. Actually, it's all over the world. But I particularly noticed it even around here, around the Mahavihara. Rumor. Huh? Barawara? Rumor. So much rumor. I don't know what. I'm not even going to say rumors I've heard. So-and-so is going to do so-and-so, somebody's been doing this, somebody's been doing that. And it comes to the front gate and it's at the back gate before you've even finished speaking. It arrives at Dapodi station and it's at city station by the afternoon. And people love to pass on a rumor. It's a very, very it's a habit which creates a lot of bad feeling. So we need to make a strong determination not to listen to rumor. And not to pass on rumor. I read recently a study by some American psychologists. They'd looked at the effect of speaking badly about somebody else. You know, if I say, well, Yasha Sagar, Subhuti gave him a lot of money to do the translation tonight. You know, he wouldn't have done it if Subhuti hadn't given him a lot of money. Yeah, two lakhs he gave him. I know he hasn't given it to his wife, but he's got 2 lakhs from this. It's definitely true. I heard it from somebody over there. So, what happens when you hear that rumor? Well, of course, you think a bit badly of Yashasaga. Actually, you probably think he's very clever, isn't he? But yeah, you think badly of Yashasaga. You know, you should just translate for Subhuti. He's talking the Dhamma. But you'll only do it if you're paid. So you think badly of Yashasaga. But the interesting thing is, you also think badly of the person who told you the rumor. This is what the psychologist found. It does affect the person about whom the rumor is being spread. But it affects the spreader of the rumor too. If you speak badly of somebody else, yes, people will think badly of that person. But they'll also think badly of you. And of course, it poisons the atmosphere of the Sangha. Now, I just want to confirm that Yashasaga has not taken one paisa. It was 2 paisa. 2 paisa. No, he didn't take anything, not a thing. But just to make sure, please don't pass any rumors around. But yes, we need to be very careful. Well, why are we passing this on? Is there any use in passing it on? Does it help? Does it create harmony? Do you even know whether it's true or not? You might say, well, yes, 3 people told me. But those 3 people all heard it from the same person. So that's no proof. So we need to be much, much more careful about what we say. We seem so quick to believe badly of others. I'm afraid my own theory is that this is particularly bad in India because of caste. It's part of the system of suspicion and opposition which is built into the system. Mistrust. So we need to counteract these tendencies. They destroy Sangha. And the only people who are attracted by that sort of speech are people with negative minds. You know, you get these political parties that are just built on hate. So people are attracted to them because they've got hate in them. The Sangha is the opposite of that. So we need to speak lovingly, kindly to each other. We need to be aware of the person we're speaking to. We need to try to understand them. We need to make sure that what we say is helpful to them. In other words, we need to have Maitri for them and speak out of our Maitri. The tongue is the best destroyer of Sangha. If you want to destroy a Sangha, start spreading rumors, start speaking badly. So we all need to take special care to speak with love. We need to speak of each other in a kindly way, in a friendly way, in a loving way. Speaking in a way that's helpful to the other person, so that it creates a stronger and stronger sense of Sangha. And as much as possible, we should make our language itself attractive. I don't speak much Marathi. Mala Marathi itna hai. Tora Tora Hindi bolta hoon. But I don't know any swear words in either language. So I don't know whether people use them a lot or not. But I'm told that some people do use a lot of those sort of that sort of language. It's just poison. It's offensive to hear it. And it shows an impoverished language. You can't express yourself unless you use that sort of language, people think. So we need to learn to speak in a way that's pleasing to hear. It's said that the Buddha's voice was delightful to hear. Even the sound of his voice was beautiful. I took once a Spanish friend of mine to see Bhante Sangharakshita. And she didn't speak any English. But she just wanted to see Bhante and hear him speak. Afterwards she told me that although she couldn't understand a word of what Bhante was saying, she just delighted in listening to him. Because his voice was so sweet. He spoke in such a beautiful way. And she said that his voice had a sort of rhythm to it. So she said she didn't mind what he was saying, she just liked the sound of his voice. So when the Buddha spoke, it said that people just loved to hear him. To hear the Buddha was already to be delighted. And then he was speaking about entirely positive things. And he spoke out of deep concern for others. And he opened the highest meaning to them. So the Buddha's voice, the Buddha's speech was Priyavadita. And it has a wonderful effect. People are just drawn towards it. So we need to be as much like that as we can. So just for the next few days, just try to pay extra attention to what you're saying. What you can do is you can look at the face of the person you're speaking to. That's the mirror for your voice. Because your voice will have an effect on the people you're speaking to. Your words will affect them. Words are very, very powerful. Words can change the world. Well, Baba Sahib was an expert with words. Look at the effect he's had on India. Words are power. They go out into the world and they change things. So they can change things for the better, they can change things for the worse. So look at your words, see where they go, see what effect they have. I'm having to do that now. I'm having to watch you and see what's happening to your faces. I'm having to see, well, am I communicating with you? Am I communicating something that's positive, that's valuable to you? Am I managing to convey to you the Buddha's teaching? Am I managing to create in you a stronger sense of how you can form Sangha? We need to be doing this all the time. Every time you speak, you're affecting the world. Our words are a force. So look at the force. What is it doing? Sometimes words can be more dangerous than violence, than direct physical violence. You know, somebody just talking about another community, they can create a huge range of violence. So watch your tongue. Look at the people around you, look at the effect that you're having on them. If we could all do that, Sangha would flourish amongst us. And if we can practice Priyavadita, yes, we will spread Sangha. When people hear kindly speech, they want to have more. They're drawn to it, they're attracted to it. So there we are, that's the second Sangraha Vastu. I've got two more. But I haven't got any notes, so I'm going to have to make it up. So yes, dana, priyavadita. The third is artacharya. This means beneficial action. It means action that benefits others. So, of course, there's many, many things that we can do that benefit others. Just helping them with their difficulties. Well, an obvious thing is helping people with education. Many people just need a bit more help to get on with their education. Maybe they don't have the right circumstances. I was very struck by this again in Bihar. In Gaya, there's a Dr. Ambedkar Hostel. I don't know whether you know it.
Yeah?
There's 500 boys from all over the neighboring districts. I'm afraid there's no equivalent for girls. But anyway, I visited that hostel and I asked the boys what their problems were. And they said, well, basically they don't get proper tuition. The tutors, well, they will only teach them if they pay them. And they can't afford it. And many of them are very ill-educated already. But they're intelligent, bright people. So just a little bit of help, just a little bit of encouragement would take them forward. So there's just an example of beneficial action. But I think we have to be careful not to get distracted. We have to remember Baba Sahib's own career. We know that Baba Sahib started off working in many, many ways to remove the difficulties so that people face through caste. He did social work, he did political work, he did agitation and so on. And he had a big effect. He was able to write the Constitution of India. And that had no doubt had a very big effect. But Baba Sahib saw that wasn't enough. Not that it wasn't important, but it wasn't enough. He saw that if there was to be a real change in India, a big change in India, the problem lay deeper. The problem lies in the attitudes, in the mind of the people. Baba Sahib saw that what people need is a completely new perspective on human life. He saw what they needed was the Dhamma. Because the Dhamma gives them the strength to change their lives. The Dhamma is the direct contradiction of Kai Kuru Shakta Ho Nika. The Dhamma completely rejects that point of view. The Dhamma puts responsibility into your own hands. The Dhamma gives you the principles to live the best life. So Baba Sahib saw that the Buddha Dhamma is the basis for a good life for the individual and the basis for liberty, equality and fraternity in society. And Baba Sahib said in his last days that he wished he'd started this work earlier.
बाबासाहेबांनी त्यांच्या शेवटशेवटीचं म्हटलं की त्यांना अशी इच्छा होती की हे काम कदाचित त्यांनी हे काम अगोदर सुरू केलं केलं पाहिजे.
I was reading the other day something he wrote where he said something like I feel I've wasted time. He said I'm going to dedicate the rest of my life to spreading Dhamma. So I wish I'd started this early. Unfortunately, he died not long after. But the message of Babasaheb's life is that the greatest welfare that we can bring people is the Buddha Dhamma. Yes, we need to help them with their material difficulties. We need to help them educate themselves. We need to help them organize themselves. But what they need more than anything is the Buddha Dhamma. They need a new human life. You know what the 22 pratigyas say? I feel I am reborn. I feel I have a new life. People need a new life. So Artacharya means giving people a new life. It means going out into India and giving people the Buddha Dhamma. Many of those who call themselves Buddhists still need the Buddha Dhamma. Buddha Dhamma isn't just a label. It's a new life. It's acting on the basis of the Dhamma. And we need to do much, much more work to spread the Buddha Dhamma. If we go to people in the spirit of the Dhamma, they will respond. You go to them wanting to help them. You see what their greatest difficulty is. And you try to help them with that. So the most important thing for us to do to benefit others is to share the Dhamma with them. And you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to have a PhD in Buddhism. You just, whatever you know, you communicate. And every one of you knows something. Share your own experience. I feel that I've been reborn. Since I began to practice the Buddha Dhamma more seriously, I feel I've got a new life. When I practice Maitri Bhavana, I feel so happy. When I practice Anapanasati, I feel so calm, so pointed. When I do puja, I feel so much love for the Buddha, so much devotion. So share your experience. See that what people really need is the Dhamma. Of course, you don't do this in a crude way or a careless way. You need to really communicate. Really understand the person and try to reach them. You most of all need to share yourself with them. But what they need in the end is a new life in the Dhamma. And when people feel that you want a new life for them, they will be drawn to you. Actually, everybody wants a new life. They only cling to the old life because it seems secure. They cling to it because they can't think of anything better. When you share with them a new life that is really a human life, they won't want it. When they see that there's a new basis for society, they will be drawn. So we need to benefit others, especially through sharing the Dhamma. And if we do that, in a sensitive way, many, many people will be drawn to us. This is my own experience. I'm travelling as much as I can, especially in North India. And I find that anywhere I stop, if I go about it in the right way, people want to hear the Dhamma. For instance, the other day I was in Gorakhpur. It's near Kushinagar. It used to be a big centre of Buddhism in the Middle Ages. And I was invited to give a day workshop in an engineering college. And there were about 700 or 800 students there. And of course they came from all different communities. So I just talked about the Dhamma. I just talked about the Dhamma in a very simple way. And I saw that quite a large number of them really responded. And many of them wanted to have more. We did communication exercises with them. They really enjoyed it. And they wanted more and more and more. So the Dhamma actually gives people what they want. It's the food that fills all stomachs. But we need to present it to people in a way that they can digest. So Artacharya is fundamentally the offering of the new life in the Dhamma. This was Baba Sahib's gift to India. A new life for India. A new society for India. But Baba Sahib's gift has not reached many people. So it's now for us to offer it more and more widely throughout India. So this is the way to make the Sangha grow. But there's one more Sangrahavastu, and that is Samanartata. I won't go into the etymology of Samanartata. Well, you know that Saman means equal. So what it means is there's an equality between what you say and what you are. So this is quite important. That you are what you say you are. You don't try and pretend that you're the Buddha. I am perfect. No, you're not perfect. Yeah, you, you, you sort of present yourself as if you had no problems. Your mind is completely skillful. You know, you have bad speech, you people there. My tongue is pure. Only honey flows from my tongue. My tongue is, yes, just completely sweet. You don't pretend that. Some people would be impressed. But remember that the higher the gadi, the longer the drop. If your gadi is right up there, you'll probably die when you fall off. One day you will fall. People will see your faults. Because they're obvious. Sooner or later it will come out. And so what you try to be is not an example of perfection. You can't do that. Well, I can't.
Yes,
I can't. Otherwise I should be translating for him. I don't know what language I said. You can't be an example of perfection. You're not the Buddha. You're not the Buddha. Yeah, you're somebody who's trying to become the Buddha. So what you are an example of is not perfection, but of effort. Example of somebody who's struggling on the path themselves. And that's deeply inspiring for people. One of the most inspiring things is when your teachers are honest about themselves. When your teacher admits, well, I didn't manage to concentrate in mindfulness of breathing today. My mind was just wandering here and there. In a way, that's very inspiring. Because it shows you that this is spiritual effort goes on every level. I think it's the most wonderful thing about Buddhism. We don't do guru worship. We don't put somebody on a pedestal and worship them. Because what we do then when we do that is they perfection, we don't have to worry. We leave them to be spiritual and we can just be worldly. We're all just brothers and sisters on the path. Some of us may have got more experience than others. You know, I've been practicing the Buddha Dhamma for nearly 40 years. That doesn't mean necessarily that I'm further on than any of you. I might not have been making enough effort for 40 years. But at least I've got some more knowledge about Dhamma, maybe many of you, yeah. But I've got many, many faults. I often forget the Dhamma. But I struggle. So we are examples of people who are really trying to apply the Dhamma in our lives. What the most inspiring thing that people can see is honesty.
ती म्हणजे आपल्यातील प्रामाणिक
somebody apologize. It's deeply moving. When you say see somebody confess their faults, it's very inspiring. What attracts people is to see that you are really trying to practice the Buddha Dhamma. So you go to people with your effort to practice the Dhamma. You're honest about what you're doing. But you speak of your practice of the Buddha Dhamma. You speak of your love of the Buddha Dhamma. You speak of your understanding of the Buddha Dhamma. And you speak in an honest way. And then people will be strongly drawn. But the most attractive thing you can find is seeing that people are really practicing seriously. So this is the fourth and in a certain sense the most important of the Sangraha Vastus. You remember Bhante Sangharakshita says that the Dhamma cannot be taught. It can only be caught. You pick it up from other people. You may have experienced this with meditation, for instance. It's what you get when somebody explains meditation, when somebody teaches meditation, is not just an explanation. They communicate to you their own experience of the Dhamma, of meditation. When they're explaining meditation, they've got some experience of it. They're able to concentrate a bit. They experience some maitri. So that communicates to you. And when you're taught meditation by somebody with a very deep experience, you pick that up. So you could say that what we bring to people is ourselves. We bring to them our own experience of the Dhamma. And that's what attracts them. So exemplifying the Dhamma in our own lives is the best way of attracting people. Just this afternoon somebody told me a very interesting story. He said that he and a friend went to see a Buddhist officer here in Pune. And they had some business to do. And that officer, after the business was over, said, "Look, there's a question I want to ask you." He said that, you know, I met many people from TBMSG. And he said that generally, I usually find that people from TBMSG are friendly and cheerful. And they stand out a bit. They seem a bit different. So he said, "Why is that?" So my friend said, "Well, we do the Maitri Bhavana every day. The Maitri Vikas every day." And I was very, very happy to hear that. Our practice shows. So we must make sure we do it. People notice the atmosphere. They pick up on the atmosphere. It's the atmosphere that attracts them or repels them. We're not always as good as we should be in TBMSG. Sometimes we're not an example of dana, we're an example of meanness. We're not an example of priyavadita, but we're an example of heart speech, yeah. Dveshavadita. Sometimes we're an example of that. We're not an example of artacharya, we're an example of mithyacharya. Sometimes we speak about the Dhamma, we're not actually practicing it. People know. They've got noses they can smell. They've got tongues they can taste. The Dhamma smells and tastes sweet. So it's up to us. Baba Sahib has given us a very, very big task to do. Bhante Sangharakshita has given us wonderful tools, a wonderful way of understanding the Dhamma. He's given us a wonderful Sangha. With that Sangha, with those tools, we can complete Baba Sahib's task. But we really need to practice the Sangraha Vastus. Otherwise, we will not draw people together, we will push them apart. And this is not something to think about other people. Don't wait for others to practice the Sangraha Vastus. Don't worry what they do. You practice, and you will have an effect. Again, I heard a story. Somebody told me that they were working in an office. And they said the atmosphere was terrible in the office. Lots and lots of gossiping, lots and lots of backbiting. Everybody moaning all the time. This person was saying that he'd been complaining to a Kalyanamitra about this. And this Kalyanamitra said, look, you can change that. When you go into your office, go with a bright face. Say positive things to people. Give things to people. And he said it was like a miracle. He said in within about 2 weeks, the whole atmosphere had changed. So that's what you can do. You can change the atmosphere around you. So don't wait for others, don't blame others, act to create a good atmosphere. And the Buddha's given you the tools to do it. Give, be generous. Speak with love. do things to help people to meet their deepest needs. And be an example of somebody living a genuine, decent human life. Be an example of somebody who's living by the Dhamma. Do that inside the Sangha. Do it outside the Sangha. And you will change the atmosphere around you. And this is guaranteed. This is the principle of karma. If you act on the basis of these skillful actions, a positive result will come. I think this is one of the most important things for us to keep remembering. The world functions according to law. There's the law of gravity. There's the law of relative, with the principle of relativity. There's all these laws that govern our lives. The mind too works according to law. That law is called the law of karma. What the law of karma says is that the way we act affects the results that we get. If we act with an unskillful mind, a negative mind, we will get a negative result. We'll harm others, and they will harm us. And we will poison our own minds for ourselves. If we act with a skillful mind, we'll have a positive result. We'll affect the world in a beneficial way outside us. And we'll get a lot of happiness and pleasure within us. So it's guaranteed. You know, we don't doubt the law of gravity. You know, you don't stand and say, I don't know whether that's going to go down or up. You're always confident it'll go down. But we don't place the same confidence in the law of the mind. But skillful action leads to beneficial effects for us and for others. That doesn't mean we won't suffer. Of course we will. That's life. But we will get the greatest possible degree of happiness ourselves and create benefit for others. So these four Sangraha Vastus will spread Sangha. The Buddha's teaching is all in accordance with the laws of life. It's in accordance with the laws of the mind. It's not just depending on supernatural forces or anything like that. It's to do with the way life really is. So practice dana, practice priyavadita, practice artacharya and samanartata. And you will get the result. If we all do it, Sangha will grow here like flowers and like rice in the monsoon. You know, when you, I've been here before the monsoon. Everything's just parched and dry. All the plants are just dry and dead. Down comes the rain. And suddenly everything goes green and flourishes.
Yeah.
So if we practice the Sangraha Vastus, the Sangha will flourish. That's guaranteed. So, brothers and sisters, it's up to us. We can do it, I know. But we have to do it individually, we have to do it collectively. So thank you very much indeed for listening to me for these 3 days. You give me a lot of pleasure, and I hope that I've given you something that you can use. Because I want to give you something useful that will change your lives and change the lives of India. Namo Buddhaya, Jai Bhim.